We live in a world where exceptional women have to sit around waiting for mediocre men.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We're bringing you all the updates on Book Talk's most popular books and whether you should waste your time on them. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. And this week, we are diving further into the Taylor Jenkins Reid universe and reading our third book, or reviewing our third book, Carrie Soto Is Back, which follows a character that you may be familiar with if you read Malibu Rising, which we did a couple of months back. And Carrie Soto is a veteran tennis player who retired due to an injury, and she set a record. But now her record is in jeopardy. And so she's making a comeback to the tennis scene alongside her father and is training to become the best female tennis player in the 1990s and hoping to take her record back. And it's really about a relationship between father and daughter, and maybe love is in the future, but it's also about women in sports and what they deal with, and especially older women in sports and what they deal with in society. So, yeah.
Honestly, just about powerful women in general and what they deal with.
But that's all Taylor Jenkins Reid's books.
I know.
Yes. Okay. Well, do you guys have any reviews?
I do. And of course, I had to do a 5-star review because I just love the fangirl Taylor Jenkins Reid fans. So this is 5 stars, or it's actually 4.5 stars, but 5 stars on Goodreads. And it's from Jessica. Thanks, TJR. This made me cry ugly tears on a public bus. And about tennis. I shouldn't be crying about tennis. I hate sports, LOL. But I absolutely love, with every fiber of my being, a good story about a daughter and her relationship with her father. The heart of the story is Javier Soto and his unconditional love and support for Carrie, both on and off the court. That is what made me cry. I wish I wasn't living halfway across the world from my own dad so I could hug him right now.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I know. Yeah, this book did make me cry as well on a plane, so I feel her pain.
Yeah. As someone whose dad did coach them not to best athlete in the world levels of success, but for probably 5 to 10 very fraught years of my life, I just really loved their relationship. So I love that.
I will say, if you are from like a single parent household or who have experienced parent loss, like, this book's gonna hit you hard.
Yeah. Like, maybe go in gently. Okay. Caitlin, what about your review?
This is a 4-star review from J.M. Conway on StoryGraph. It starts with a quote that was one of the options Catherine had for this. But says, one of the great injustices of this rigged world we live in is that women are considered to be depleting with age and men are somehow deepening. Then it says, the bitch is back. I loved this. Classic Jenkins Reid. Characters so real, they jump out of the page. It honestly felt like reading a celebrity docufilm or expose. Great stuff. I didn't know it was possible to see a tennis match by reading.
Yes.
Take that one, because I felt the same way. I was like, wow, I feel like I'm like watching a movie, but I'm not.
Yeah, like, yes. I'm watching the most exciting tennis match of my life.
Exactly. It's so visual. And I hate tennis, so I've watched very little of it. And I still like felt like I could just feel the moment so perfectly.
Yeah. None of us Serena are Williams players. Last match, just because, you know. And I was like, this is what this is right here.
Okay. Well, I cheated big time this week. I have 3 reviews.
No.
And yes, they're all really short and they're all funny. So I'm going to do them all. And they all go progressively up. Like, I'm going to start with the lowest review and they all get progressively higher. So this is a 1-star review from Lucky on Goodreads. She says, tennis. The plot is tennis. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Okay.
I mean, you knew what you were getting.
Yeah, this is Taylor Jenkins Reid. All right. She gave us all the surfing details and she's giving us all the tennis details too.
She's an expert.
She is. Okay. Next one is from Emma, a 3-star review. Only Taylor Jenkins Reid could trick me into reading a sports book, let alone actually enjoying it. She goes on to describe more, but I thought it was hilarious. That's exactly how I felt. The last one is a 4-star review. Carrie Soto is that bitch. Is she easily palatable? Not widely, no. Is she easy to root for? Perhaps not. Do I adore her? Unequivocally. I was like,
hell yeah.
Oh, yes.
She's here, that here. Bitch.
How about this 5-star review from user Casey?
Oh, no.
Literally cannot believe Taylor Jenkins Reid managed to make me give a fuck about tennis.
Yep. That's how I feel. I literally cannot believe it. Tennis.
Yeah.
The most boring sport in the world. It's like at the very bottom of sports to watch, not necessarily, you know, to play, is like tennis, and then right below it is golf. Like, I just can't, like, nothing is going on. But it was so intricate, and I loved
it.
We
were all contact sport kids, weren't we?
Yeah.
I was swimming.
Oh.
I was basketball.
Yeah, I was soccer.
I could not do things with balls. I have no hand-eye coordination, so nope.
Well, yes.
You would have been an excellent contact sport kid, though.
Would I have been?
We've all got a little fire.
That's true.
Yeah. I will say, I don't think you have to know about tennis or care about tennis at all to like this book. I do think it helps to have played sports at one point and to understand sports or have some level of passion for sports. Because like I said, even though I didn't care about tennis, I could relate to a lot of the dynamics of training and like the relationship with her dad, who is also her coach, and like, you know, knowing elite athletes and like what it takes to really like drive yourself to that level. And so I don't think it's necessary, but I do think it helps because almost all the negative reviews are talking about how there's too much tennis.
Well,
yeah,
in the
go ahead.
Well, it's because the book is about women in sports, and it's about this relationship between father and daughter and her relationship with tennis and whether or not it's healthy. You have to, in order to understand her better, you have to kind of understand the psyche of a professional athlete, or at least an athlete who is trying to get to a professional level. Because, I mean, I think all three of us at one point were really dedicated to a sport. Not necessarily we're going to be in the Olympics, but like, we were dedicated enough to understand
two-a-days for high school volleyball. You
yeah,
know?
The mental psyche behind it. And that's what makes you appreciate her so much more, is because like I mm-hmm. felt like I completely relate to her, even though I played tennis like 1 year as a kid and I never understood it. It was more of me just hitting a ball around and that was about it. But like I felt like I could understand her personality and her reasoning mm-hmm. behind things.
Right. And I was never like uber competitive. I liked to compete, but not in the way that you need to be an elite athlete. But I grew up with girls who were like this, who were trying to be the best, who were trying to go to the top, who wanted to be professional female athletes. And so I was like, this is real. I really believe this is like a real depiction of a competitor.
Yeah, I can say I was that kid who preferred practice to a game because I just liked, you know, playing sports with my friends.
Yeah.
So I was watching this. I felt like I was watching it. I was reading this. I was like, wow, I'm tired just reading this. This is not, I have no desire to ever be Carrie Soto. <Yeah. laughs> And like, I don't have an opinion on tennis other than I think the scoring system's stupid. But I was like, wow. The review I read was like, I'm so invested in tennis now. Too bad all the characters I'm invested in are fake. And I'm like, yeah, I'm probably not going to watch tennis anytime soon. But for this book, I was like, yeah, this is intense. Like,
I saw so many reviews where like people are like, I can't believe Carrie Soto is not real.
Well, I saw a lot of people comparing it to the Serena Williams, Naomi Osaka, like end of Serena's career kind of thing. And pretty accurate on that front.
I was reading parts of the book and I was like, this has to be like near screenshot, very close paraphrasing of things people have said about Serena Williams.
Oh, yeah.
It's clearly inspired by her journey. I mean, that's my opinion as someone who's not an expert, but you can tell it's very much in the vein, the way people talk about Serena Williams, how she's built, how she's an athlete, all of that sort of sexist language is also a part of Carrie Soto.
And I don't care about tennis, but man, Serena Williams is a boss and I am well aware of who she is, you know, like,
oh yeah,
that's what they're portraying is a woman who is at the forefront. And even the people who do not watch their sport know who they are.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Goodreads overall 4.2 out of 5. Amazon 4.4 out of 5. I feel like I'm personally a little surprised because I feel like everyone I've talked to ever is like, oh my God, read it right now. But I think it fits with my star rating. I gave it a 4 just because, yeah, I love Taylor Jenkins' read writing. It was just, I predicted everything that was going to happen. And I'm still not a tennis fan, so.
Ah.
That's the only reason, though. Like, once again, her writing is beautiful and draws you right in, and her character development is phenomenal.
I honestly think it should be higher, these Goodreads reviews, because, like, I think Evelyn Hugo was, like, at 4.7, and maybe this is a hot take, but I think this book is better.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll get into that later. Wow.
Yeah, it's, I'll say it's so close for me. They're so neck and neck. I don't think I'll be sure where I come down on that question for a few more months of thinking about it. I do give this book 5 stars. I thought it had great pacing. I was along for the journey. I did think it was kind of predictable, but I didn't really care. Like, I was wrapped up in the story enough that I was just along for the ride and really invested in it. I think Carrie Soto is an amazing character, and she has some of the greatest character development that I also found really relatable. I think all overachievers have to, like, come to terms with the fact that, like, you need to stop being so driven by, like, fear of failure. And that's really what Carrie Soto is about, in addition to some amazing, like, critical discussions on the way women are portrayed in media. So yeah, it was a 5 stars for me.
So just kick off our discussion question.
Oh, wait, sorry, there's one more thing. Okay, I was reading reviews and I just want to mention this at the top before we get into it. I saw some negative reviews talking about how people did not like the portrayal of Argentinian culture in the book and that the Spanish had errors in it. I cannot speak to that. I do not know if it did. I don't know if this is a good portrayal of Argentinian people, but I just wanted to mention it because I can't read the book from that perspective. So if you felt that way, feel free to let us know. But we're 3 white women who I don't think can really evaluate if this is accurate portrayal of a Spanish Hispanic family.
I mean, it was basic enough Spanish that I understood all the Spanish parts. I know some people said I didn't know what was happening in those parts because she doesn't translate them. But I don't know, maybe it's so basic it comes off as poorly written, but I understood it. So
yeah,
thanks, like, from a white girl.
Yeah, I can't speak to, like, the grammatical and, like, spelling of things, but it was translatable for me with a rudimentary Spanish level. So maybe because Taylor Jenkins Reid, I'm assuming she is not fluent in Spanish. So it might be going off of, like, rudimentary Spanish skills.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, if people are criticizing it with that, like, I can't speak to that.
And Catherine and I were just in Argentina, but most of the culture we experienced was the food. So we can't speak to that one either.
No. Yeah, I didn't talk to any tennis stars.
It is awesome.
Yeah. Argentina's great. You should go there.
Yes. Lovely people. Very hospitable. To kick off the discussion before we kind of dive in, I was reading about the different comparisons, connections in the Taylor Jenkins Reid universe. I didn't realize that between Daisy Jones, The 7 Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, Malibu Rising, and now Carrie Soto is back, She is called These, the Famous Four. And this is like the fourth and final of the four books about famous women and how like the world views them and media portrays them in their lives. And I was like, oh, that makes so much sense now. So it's actually those four. Yeah, they're connected. And I think there's one more book that mentions some like Daisy Jones and stuff. But so if you don't know, Daisy Jones is about a band. Gary Soto's tennis, obviously. Malibu Rising is like surfing / modeling. And then Seven Husbands is acting. So there you have it, the Famous Four. I didn't know this like TJR lore, but there it is.
Fascinating. Sad it's over, but some very strong books.
Yeah. So to get into it now, plot or character driven?
I'm going to say character. I think you can argue plot in a sense because, you know, athletes are never totally in control of if they win or lose. Like, you know, obviously hard work and talent and like blah, blah, blah. But like, you know, once you're at a high level, anything can happen. So I think you can argue that that's plot, but Carrie Soto's decision to get back in the game and her development as a person, kind of coming to terms with the end of her career, with letting go and accepting her legacy, is really what the book is about. And it's, and so that's all, you know, character. And so I say character driven.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's character driven. Just, I mean, like the title is Carrie Soto is back. She is going through a journey of growth, and maybe it's portrayed through like this plot of like getting back her record. But for the most part, it's really just about her and moving on to a next phase of her life, but also showing the world who she is and that she doesn't have to play by society's rules. So it's very much about her and her development.
Yeah, I agree. 100% for me, character driven. Like, it's not the only, it's not one of those like meandering character development stories that you guys know I'm not a biggest fan of, but it's still like 100% about character development. There's just some rise, fall, action, plot stuff going on alongside it.
Ooh, our next question is the controversial one. It's, how does this book rank in the TGR universe?
So we've all only read three of the four Famous Four, correct?
I read Daisy Jones and the Six.
Oh, Casey has the best perspective then.
Yeah, because we've only read Malibu Rising, Seven Husbands, and this one, correct, Caitlin?
Yes. I will say my coworker just finished watching Daisy Jones and said, even though I knew how it ended because I read the book, I cried, you need to read it right now. So
I will read it.
Eventually I'll get to it.
Yeah.
But okay, so I feel like I'm going to have the, I don't know, you guys were already kind of getting into it. So I'm just going to go first and step out of the way and let y'all let y'all get into it. For me personally, I read Malibu Rising first, and I would say of the three I've read it, it's my least favorite. I just thought the characters weren't quite as dynamic. I think for me, my favorite is Seven Husbands. While I think I liked the character of Carrie Soto better and felt, I don't want to say relatable, but like just more in tune with like, I could feel what she was feeling. I think the storyline in Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo is far more interesting. And yeah, so that one's going to be my favorite. It edges out Carrie Soto by a little bit.
Okay, I can go next. So I've read them all. Daisy Jones is far and away my least favorite. It's the only one I didn't really like. It's written in interview style, and I just really didn't vibe with it. I also think there's some like flaws in the storytelling, which is like very atypical for TJR. And I think in the other books, the characters are really complex and at times are anti-heroes, but are still ultimately likable and redeemable. In Daisy Jones, I hated the characters, didn't give a fuck about them, and didn't like them at all. So that was my least favorite. The next one is definitely Malibu Rising, which I liked but didn't love. I think I gave it 4 stars, and you can listen to our episode if you want more details on that. Between Evelyn Hugo and Carrie Soto, I'm having a really hard time deciding which is my number one. As far as Carrie Soto goes, I did find her more personally relatable. There was more in her story that I felt like actually like touched my life and the way I am as a human. And so I do feel like I connected to her more. I liked her more overall as a main character. And I did think because of the tennis and like the consistent tennis games, it had better forward motion and forward pacing. But I agree. I think Evelyn Hugo is overall a stronger story. Evelyn Hugo just had such an interesting and complicated life. And that's why I'm really struggling to say if one is my favorite. I don't know. Catherine, are you going to convince me? What are you going to say?
Got to pick one before she talks. Which way are you leaning?
I think I might be slightly leaning Carrie Soto. So I want to see if Catherine's reasoning can push me over the edge. Okay. I think ultimately you always love the books that manage to touch a piece of your personal life the most. And that's what I felt with Carrie Soto. And so that's why I think I'm leaning that direction. But Catherine, I'll let you say your piece.
So, okay. Unsurprisingly, Malibu Rising is my least favorite as well. Same reasons as y'all. I liked it, didn't love it. I think I gave it 3.5 stars-ish, between 3 and 4. It's still Taylor Jenkins Reid. She does a good job, but there are lulls and moments, and I didn't love all the characters, but I liked the lore and the universe. Seven Husbands was amazing, fantastic. It's also 5 stars for me. I will say, though, the reason why Carrie Soto takes it for me is because, like Casey said, she touched a piece of my soul and I felt like I could relate to her a lot more. Her experience as a woman in sports and like these men telling her she's a bitch and a battle axe and like for just not being like this overtly feminine or this like personable nice girl. Like I related to that a lot more because I hate playing fake nice. And I think Carrie Soto has better character development than Evelyn Hugo. Evelyn Hugo, I think, stays pretty stagnant throughout the story. She's a very fascinating character, and I love her relationship with I'm forgetting her name. Oh my gosh.
Celia.
I was going to say Celine, so thank you. I love her relationship, and I love this idea of Seven Husbands, but there were points where I was kind of wanting the story to move forward a bit more because it kept flipping back and forth between past and present. Some of the husbands I wasn't really that interested in, but Carrie Soto I read in one sitting and I felt like the story just continued to push along and I had to get to the end. So that is why Carrie Soto takes it for me, is because I think she was even more complicated, but also a flawed character that changed by the end and that grew up.
So I think the takeaway here is if you are into more character-driven books, you're going to prefer Carrie Soto. If you are into more interesting plot, a little mysterious, you're going to prefer Seven Husbands. Malibu Rising is like a weird mix of the two. I don't know. It's its own thing, but I think that's our maybe takeaway.
Yeah, good summary. Gosh, that made me so stressed out. This is why I can't wait. Picking between two of my like favorite books is like actually causing my heart rate to jump. I'm like, oh no.
Okay, well, easier question for you then.
Thank God.
Pacing of the book.
I thought the pacing was really, really good. I remember the chapters are like fairly short, so you can kind of consistently pick it up and put it down if you need to, but also that kind of helps you like digest everything. I mentioned this before, but there's consistently tennis matches and those sort of break up like the character development pieces. So I think it makes it like really digestible.
Yeah. It was super fast paced. I read it in 2 sittings. Probably like 5 or 6 hours total, I think.
Yeah, I think I read it in 2 days and also 2 sittings.
Yeah, so I think it's the really excellent pace. Really excellent.
Yeah. I read it in one sitting, and it was a plane ride from Detroit to Houston. So like 3.5 hours. Started it and finished it on the plane. Yes. So
this should tell you how crazy she is, because it took me 5 or 6 hours just sitting there reading it nonstop.
Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah, she's crazy. I was going to say, I think it was probably like I sat down one night and read it for 3 hours, and then sat down another night and read it for another 3 hours. So Catherine's insane. And our final question, would you watch a movie or TV show about this book?
Yes, it needs to happen.
I think yes, only because I've read the book. I tend to not go for like biopic kind of stuff usually, especially about sports. But having read the book, I would really like to see it. Also, her other three of the Famous Four have either recently become shows or in development to become shows. So my guess is very short time before this one appears too.
I'm going to have an unpopular opinion on this one. If they made it into a TV show or movie, I would watch it. I don't think it will make a great TV show or movie the way it does a book. I think there's too much tennis, and I think it will get boring. I think TJR has made reading sports more palatable because she's just an excellent writer and has mixed in so much like character and plot. I think if it was made into a movie or TV show, that part of it would just kind of get boring for me.
Fair point.
Mm-hmm.
You either like tennis or you don't.
Because the tennis is a lot of the book. Like, if mm-hmm. you take out all the tennis parts, it's like, is that enough for a TV show? Like,
well, the games were mostly like shortened and summarized.
Mm-hmm.
But
a movie.
That's harder to do. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe a movie. I think it would be a little easier. We'll see. I'm not in love with the idea.
Okay, well. Are you ready to get to the spoilers?
Busy girl rating.
Busy girl rating.
Sure. I pulled a Casey.
Yeah, I was like, I just did that. Boom, you get fired.
Busy girl 5. Yay.
5.
Yeah, 5.
It's just so easy to pick up, put down, to sit down and just read through, because it reads like such a story. Like, you just got to keep, I don't know. That was a terrible way to explain that. It's just so nice. It's just,
yeah, you're compelled to continue reading.
Yeah, it reads like a movie, and you don't stop halfway through a movie.
No,
absolutely. All right, now Caitlin,
spoiler alert, the bitch is back.
Oh my gosh. So this book is the last in this Famous Four lore, and it takes place after all of the other books. And it features a character from Malibu Rising, which is Carrie Soto herself. She shows up in Malibu Rising as the mistress of the main character's husband. So what did you think about this book in TJR lore? Did that dissuade you from reading this book at all, knowing that she was the mistress?
It made me want to read it.
Yeah, I was so excited for this book because of her scene in Malibu Rising.
And I feel like she was only sort of like what I thought from Malibu Rising, and then like exceeded my expectations.
Yeah, because you can tell she's someone who's chaotic but fair. Like, I don't want to spoil. I mean, it's not really a spoiler, but she shows up and she's like really chaotic, but you know, she's not one of those women who like blames the other woman. Like, she's like there, like hunting after the man to like see him get accountability. And so from the start, I was like, I love like a chaotic, respectable bitch. Like, let's do it.
Yeah.
The disappointing part was though, when you find out, like, that's a blip in this book, mm-hmm. but you find out that she never did break up with him after that. It was eventually he left her for someone else. I was like, come on. You put on the show. Why didn't you just like be the tough cookie you are and get over him?
I will say this. I had trepidations about this book because I thought it was going to feature her and that man that she cheated with. because I did not like him. So that was more of my concern. I was like, I swear to fucking God, if it's their love story, I'm going to throw something at a wall because she deserves so much better. Both of the main characters do. So I was pleasantly surprised that it takes place like 5 or 8 years after that book, and she's moved on and she's just like, yeah, no, didn't work out. Turns out he was a douche. I'm gonna focus on me. And I'm like, oh, love you.
I agree. I was kind of relieved it didn't talk about that so much, because for the same reason, I was like, I don't want it to be about them falling in love. And I'm just watching this relationship that I know is like terrible and like destined to burn to the ground. So I was glad it wasn't that. That being said, I absolutely loved Mick Riva's appearances in this book. They made me laugh so hard. Like,
and all she did was call him a piece of shit the whole time.
Yeah, yep. She was like, he's fucking gross. Why is he here? Like, fucking. Oh, wait. Actually, I think I'm thinking of Daisy Jones and the Six.
Yeah, he doesn't like show up in this.
But movie. She mentions him.
Yeah, she mentions him and that he's a piece of shit.
Okay, well, I love that too. But if you want to read Daisy Jones and the Six, the only part I liked were the parts where they were talking shit about Mick Riva.
Yeah. Did you? I don't think you have this later. Do you want to go through some of the little connections through the universe?
It's like the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah. So the ones I noticed, they mention Brandon Randall dating Nina Riva and how Nina's the daughter of Mick and they hate him. They mention Evelyn Hugo.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember in what context. And then I love she was reading a gossip magazine about Daisy Jones and the Six.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, I don't know if you caught this. So Gwen, the manager, her husband's leaving her for someone named Naomi. Isn't that another character in one of her books? I couldn't find it, but I thought it was.
I don't remember. Anyway. I didn't catch that one. But I was going to say the excerpts in this book are, they pull some from like Zona Rosa, which is also an Evelyn Hugo.
Yep.
Right.
And again, in Daisy Jones and the Six, they're both in the music industry. So the whole like Daisy Jones and the Six group is at a party with Mick Riva, and he like comes to Daisy Jones' house and he's like being a gross, weird perv.
Oh yeah, if we're talking the whole universe, Celia St. James shows up at a party in a Malibu Rising.
Yeah.
I think also one of the excerpts in Carrie Soto is the magazine that Vivant, that Monique mm-hmm. writes for in Seven
Yes, Husbands. I yep. noticed that too. I was like, ah!
Yeah. Oh, sure. I don't know. They're like very little drops. I mean, they're all famous people in this time period, so they all
they run in the same
know
circles.
Who each other are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're all in California, all run in the same circles.
And they all hate Mick Riva.
It's great.
Truly one of the most hateable characters. Okay, anyway. So moving on to Carrie Soto, all of us are saying how much we love her as a character. She's complicated, motivated, ambitious. What do you think of her now, like when we see her in the book years later, as she's sort of getting back into her career?
So I think she is the most relatable TJR character, main character that I've read, because like what woman who has spoke her mind hasn't been called a bitch? That hit home.
mm-hmm. Yes.
And yeah, I think that was the most relatable part, is like a woman who speaks her mind and is unapologetic for her talents is often seen as like brash and forward, and men don't receive the same treatment. It's seen as like dominating the field. And I really enjoyed that commentary because, you know, I'm not on anywhere near the same level, but I feel like every woman's been there at some point.
I completely agree. I loved her like struggle with failure, her struggle with, you know, just like, who am I without tennis? Like, everything she was going through was just so like deep and like relatable, especially if you're an overachiever, that feeling of like feeling like you have to do the best at everything. I really loved. I also just loved the also the discussion of the way she was interpreted versus some of her white counterparts, and how there were all these cutthroat, skinny, beautiful white women who were also bitches, and only Carrie Soto is really being called a bitch, you know? And so it's like this, I enjoyed the dynamics that she explored with how we portray and evaluate women and expect them to behave based on race and gender.
And age, because it talks about Bo playing his last games and her playing her last games, and Bo's seen as like, wow, great job for doing this, and they're like, Carrie, you're too old, get off the court.
Yeah, right. Like she was destroying the sport for playing it.
Was Carrie selfish? Yes. Was she a little hard to love at some points? Yes. Mm-hmm. But
she was immature.
She was unapologetically herself.
Yeah.
I think this is probably the first book, which I'm young, so obviously I read a lot of books that are like more set towards my age range, but I think this is the first book I've written of someone who's a little bit older than me that really tackled the age dynamic. I mean, Carrie Soto wasn't that old, but she is for a woman in sports. And so I loved all of that commentary. And I've honestly never really read a book that like fully tackled the way we view women when they age. I'm sure it's not the only book that does that, but for like a young woman, that was really my first foray into it. And I thought she did a great job.
No, I absolutely loved Carrie Soto, because normally when you read about women, especially women in like society, adversity, and some who experience some pushback from society, but there's always this idea of, like, oh, I really want to be liked. I really want to be fit in and stuff like that. This is the first time I ever read really a book where they said, fuck fitting in and fuck being liked. Like, I don't care. I'm not going to play by your rules. I'm not going to play nice in front of the cameras just to get more likes or clicks. This is just who I am. I'm going to play who I am, and I'm not going to play by your rules. And I never thought I needed that reading, but it was the most refreshing read because of it, because like, you don't see that from women, female characters.
Well, I think while that part of her all came off really harsh and should have been unlikable, it was her love for her father and her dedication to family that like softened it and made her likable. And I really, really loved that part of the story.
That is also absolutely true. I've already said on this episode, I loved the father-daughter dynamic. It was refreshing and endearing and sweet, but it was also strained. Like, I felt that was totally realistic and I loved it. The loss of him, I'm sure we all saw it coming. You just knew the time was ticking. He was way too likable and his death still crushed me. It really leveled me. It was so emotional. It was great writing.
I know it's jumping ahead, but I kind of want to dive into that part since we brought it up. I will say I did not cry because I'm heartless and I never do. But the part that almost got me was not when he died, but when she was in the tiebreaker of her final match and she realized there weren't any more notes from her dad on the subject. And she was like, from now on, like, I'm doing this by myself. I was like, oh my God, that's so sad. But Javier is the best character in the book.
because it's just such a beautiful dynamic. Because you start when they're young, when she's younger, and he's a single parent who really wants the best for his kid, but at the same time is a little too driven towards fame and driven towards like being the best, and not totally teaching her that you don't have to be the best to be a good person and to be like fulfilled in your life. And he realizes that later in life. And then it's like this, they have the falling out when she's like in her 20s, and then they're coming back together throughout this book as she's making her comeback. And I think that's just like the beauty of it, is him subtly trying to teach her that tennis isn't everything, but also at the same time giving her what she wants and like helping her get to the goals because he wants his daughter to be happy.
Yeah, I like that he unpacks eventually, like it's kind of the tipping point for them that he taught her tennis and made it their thing because he just like really didn't know what else to do when her mom died. Like that was what he knew. So that's what he taught Carrie, and how constantly pumping her up and telling her she could be the greatest in the world and calling her my Achilles, greatest of the Greeks, like turned her into what she is and telling her like, I don't know. It was interesting for her trying to unpack that her dad loved her no matter the outcome. And that's all she ended up really wanting in the end. But it took her a really long time to get there. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of frustrating because you're like, oh my God, it's okay if you lose. But also then you're like, yeah, take her down. Like you felt the conflict along with her. I don't know. It was really beautiful.
I really liked
their relationship.
Right. Like you guys said, I think they do a great job of showing a parent who like the love is there and they're trying to teach the right lessons and then they don't totally impart what they want to. I think that's so real in parenting. I think there are times when my parents did that to me where they weren't trying to do like teach me the lesson that I learned from things and it ended up, you know, making things not like the best, like things got worse instead of better and you have to reconcile it when you grow up. And so I thought that was a really great portrayal of a parent-daughter dynamic of like, they're both just kind of making mistakes and he didn't mean to, but he like instilled this like culture of success and being the best. And Carrie really had to sort of unravel that as she got older.
So something Taylor Jenkins Reid does in all of her books in the famous four is incorporate like news, magazine, media, which makes sense because they're famous people. And so they're constantly being critiqued by people in the news. In this book, there were a lot of little interjection articles. Some of them helped move the story along. Some of them just provided some misogynistic commentary. What do you think of them? Were they necessary, the little sportscaster excerpts?
I loved them. Some of them. I will say some of them. Some of them I was like, I could do without. But the one I really loved was the really misogynistic male anchor who called her a bitch originally. And the female anchor that's kind of forced to sit by him, who he keeps interrupting throughout the beginning of the book, because apparently she can't have an opinion. She has to agree with him is kind of what he's thinking. But then by the end, she's taken his job essentially and is interrupting him and being like, no, Carrie Soto's fucking great. And I could have told you this a while ago and you just wouldn't listen to me. And that was like a side plot and a side character I absolutely adored because like, you all know the man that talks over you. You all know the guy that like belittles your position and you have to work with, but he's being misogynistic ass. It still happens today. I think we've all can attest to that. So it felt like a little bit of like justice by the end of the book when she finally like takes over and you're like, oh, lovely. Like the side plot is amazing.
I love that too. And I just love that the male anchor calling her a bitch turned into a battle cry for her female fans.
Yeah. Okay. So I was going to say, I don't think I liked them as much as you guys did. There were times when I found them a little distracting and beside the point. I did like, however, that they provided sort of like a cultural context that we couldn't get from Carrie's perspective. I just wish that they all felt a little more purposeful. There were some where I was like, I don't know that this one was totally necessary. It's a little distracting. But the ones where you find out that they've kind of taken, especially older women have like taken this like misogynistic language about Carrie and used it as a rallying cry were like my favorite. I was like, yes, like, fuck yeah, the bitch is back. Like,
I just love like the commentary. Did he just call me a bitch on CNN?
Yeah.
I'll be a bitch on CNN.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, dang, that hot mic situation. I've seen that before. Never that bad, but.
I'm wondering, because like this kind of brings up a question in my head about throughout the book, there's not only the pressure for herself to do well, but there's pressure from women and fans that she has to do well in order to validate women in sports, essentially, and for older women to be in sports and that they have a place. What did y'all think of that, like, societal pressure throughout the book?
The sponsorship discussion was interesting because the Pretty Blonde girls were getting more sponsorships than she was, despite being the dominant player, because she was just kind of unlikable on the court and unapologetically good and said, I'm going to rip their heart out.
Yeah, I love that part. I love the whole discussion of sports as a business as well, and how, like, branding and the way you're perceived and, again, like, race and gender play in that. I forgot where I was going. What was your question, Catherine?
Like, how society and women specifically were, like, hanging like, their hats on her.
Right. Okay. I loved it because I think women still feel this pressure today, especially women of color. There's this quote that I love. I think it's from Maya Angelou, but she's like, every time a woman stands up for herself without knowing it, and possibly without owning it, she stands up for all women. And that's how it feels, is like every time a woman puts her foot down, a man who didn't know his place learns his place. Like, and it's so heavy, but it's also, and you feel that pressure in the book and it feels suffocating. Like, that's one of the most suffocating parts, is feeling like if you fail, you'll actually set back women's progress. Like, that's such a heavy burden to carry. But also watching her just, like, say fuck the haters and do amazing was so relieving and rewarding. So yeah, I loved it.
I mean, like, yeah, her personal fear of failure is dramatic. Like, she cannot yeah. leave, but there is that societal pressure of, like, I decided to come back and now I will fail older women everywhere if I don't win something.
Mm-hmm.
And no, thank you. Pass. That's too much.
It's very much giving, like, even if you break out of the place you're originally supposed to inhabit, they'll try to put a new, like, glass ceiling on you, you know? Like, okay, women are good at tennis. Kerry Soto was a great tennis player, but she's out of the game now, and women can't come back. You know, like, every time there's a new barrier that for some reason is tied to gender.
Or, like, oh, well, she messed up on the first one. That was her only shot. Okay, back to normal news. Like,
yeah, like one failure or one, like, one woman failing fails all women somehow. Like, that's a very intense pressure. But you can see that even in modern sports, where, like, when Serena Williams loses a match, people lose their shit. But, like, when a man loses a match, it's not talked about.
Right. Like, Bo can lose and have this, like, meek ending to his career all he wants, and people are still like, oh, we respect the guy, like, he's going out, blah, 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 and it's not a big deal. But, like, Carrie doing that is, like, the end of the world. Okay, anyway, speaking of Bo, he is the love interest, and he sort of on his own has his own type of redemption arc, because he also wasn't a very likable player in his heyday. So what did you guys think of him as a love interest and his development?
I was so obsessed with after they finally kind of start getting together and they're rehashing their first hookup back in their heyday, like 10 years ago, and she had left without, like, talking to him. And because she was under the assumption that she was never the girl that people settle down with, she's just the girl that they sleep with. So she internalized that so much that she just didn't get in relationships unless they were kind of toxic or she knew they were not going to last. And so she just left that morning, just assuming that, because assuming that he was that type of guy. But then he kind of, like, refutes that by saying, like, you're the one that left that morning. You didn't know that I actually kind of wanted you to stay and wanted a relationship with you even back then. And I was like, that warms my cold heart because that's just so freaking sweet. And I just love that he was like trying to get clean and be a better person than he was back then. But also like he was just trying to help her as well. They were helping each other. And like he just truly loved her for her and not wanting her to change her bitch persona, I guess.
I love that they were equally matched in their temper and motivation. And I love their fights. They were realistic. I fell in love with Bo when he and Javier became like best buds. I was like, marry him. Marry him right now. Marry him. I thought it was so sweet how, because he loved Carrie, he loved Javier. And Javier was like, he's in love with you. What are you going to do about it?
Oh, Javier was great about that.
I loved that. The three of them together was like the perfect little family unit. And then, of course, you knew it was going to get ripped away from you. But he took such good care of her and her trauma and her sadness and was like reading books on how to cope for her and got her to her final match. Like, such a sweetheart. But, you know, age makes you wiser.
Right.
Usually. So that was a good example of how he'd grown out of his celebrity phase and was ready to like be serious. Unlike all the other TJR men you read about because they're famous pieces of crap.
Right. I also loved it. I love that he's the person who sort of introduces this like mental health component to her game. I thought that was awesome. I also loved that. So Carrie Soto starts off with the quote-unquote good guy of tennis, who was married to Nina Riva at the time, and he's actually a bad guy. And then this bad guy of tennis, who was known for bad behavior, is really the good guy. And I loved that reversal, especially because I think a lot of times the guys who seem good are really just guys who understand branding and aren't the ones who are actually like genuine and have good intentions. And so I really liked the sort of exploration of him as a character.
I mean, bad boy with a heart of gold is my love. So obviously I'm going to love Bo Huntley.
Temper on the court, but heart of gold otherwise.
Right. Okay, our next question, and one that I love, is what did you think of the relationship between Carrie and her rival, Nikki Chan?
Loved it. Hilarious.
Oh my God. It's okay. I know. Okay. Bo is great. Javier, obviously amazing. This is my favorite relationship in the book. I loved how the relationship changes as Carrie changes. She becomes more open to friendship. I love that Nikki Chan is this like hardcore ass competitor, but has, you know, learned to kind of balance it with her personal life a little better, and how she like approaches Carrie with respect, but also competition of like, I want to fucking beat your ass. Like I loved watching two women be so stone cold and competitive while also just being like friendly and good people and not being catty, like being competitive without being catty. I thought it was amazing.
Right. Like her calling when her dad died is like, if you want to back out, I'll back out too, because I want to beat you fair and square. I was like, that is supportive, but savage. Like,
yeah.
I enjoyed, I just enjoyed their banter. And I feel like that's where you saw Carrie hit her tipping point. Cause she was like, you need to pay attention to what I do, not to what I say. Like, I'm here playing you, aren't I? And like, they're both older. They're both not white. They're both like gonna break a record one way or the other. It's just a matter of who does it. And so I thought they were well matched, and I loved the little ending where she's like coaching Nikki through her last years of tennis. I was like, oh, cute.
I saw a comment that the ending was cheesy, and I was like, shut the fuck up.
It was cheesy and I liked it.
I loved it.
Me all the cheese.
Like her and Bo sitting in the stands coaching Nikki like her father coached her. Like it was such a like well-rounded moment. And like her and Nikki, like they're respectful with each other, but they can be hardcore and be like call each other a bitch when they're being a bitch, but like they're being respectful of each other. Like I appreciate their cutthroat competitiveness without being terrible to each other. Like, there's still that friendship and respect of like, these are the two greatest women in sports. We don't need to cut each other down. Let's just leave it all out on the field.
Right. Yeah. And she's not scared of Carrie like every other person in the locker room. Like, they are a good match. You know, Carrie's like, can't wait to rip their hearts out. And Nikki's like, I would tear my best friend limb from limb on public television. Like, none of them mince their words, especially with each other. But I like that that was kind of the first person Carrie could sort of open up to, because they were in very similar points in their lives.
Yeah. And they understood each other as women of color who were at the top of their fields. Like, they dealt with a lot of the same barriers and the same sexist language. Like, Nikki Chan had her own like sort of sexist battle axe nickname, just like Carrie. And so yeah, it was, they were a perfect fit.
Okay, so the ending, we talked about the epilogue, super cheesy, but it ends, I kind of saw this coming, but it ends with Carrie losing to Nikki, losing her record. Her final game is a very, very close loss. What do you think?
Okay, so I had two guesses, like main guesses for what I thought the ending was going to be. I thought either Carrie was going to tie her record and then Nikki Chan was just going to win it back the next year, or I thought Carrie was going to lose. And so Carrie lost. But to TJR's credit, there's really only two possible endings, Carrie wins or Carrie loses. So it's kind of hard for it not to be predictable.
And like, and you said, so, she was going to lose her record either right then or the next year. Like, there was no doubt.
Nikki wasn't ending.
And exactly. I think she realized that, and you realize it alongside her, which is refreshing. And I just really loved that at the end, you know, Carrie smiled. She realized it was a job well done. She knew her dad would be proud of her. She knew she had her people in the stands cheering for her. And she took it with like such grace. And it was like the peak of her character development. And I thought it was a really lovely little end. And I'm glad she was humbled but accepted it.
It was the closest she had been to her father almost, even though he was gone. And she was the most well-rounded she has ever been, and I think that was the whole point of the comeback.
Like, she realized she had been the greatest in the world and she had played the best tennis she'd ever played, and that's all she needed.
Yeah, as Javier would say, she'd played beautiful tennis and that was enough. And I was like,
she beat herself, that's what mattered.
Exactly. And I loved that lesson.
Okay, final question, y'all. Do you now give a shit about tennis?
No.
I give a shit about Carrie Soto. I do not give a shit about real life tennis.
I would watch a Carrie Soto tennis match.
I maybe still wouldn't. Like I said, I watched Serena Williams' last match, and I think it's the only time I've seen her play outside of maybe the Olympics. Right. She lost to her younger opponent. It was like the same ending. She like took it with grace. Everyone cheered for her. It was lovely. And I was like, oh yeah, I saw what that felt like. That was so nice.
Also, I totally felt like Nikki Chan was inspired by Naomi Osaka.
Oh yeah.
The parallels between like Serena and Naomi is just, you can't ignore it. Yeah.
Yep. 100%.
Well, that's our discussion for today. Thanks for joining along. Give us a rate and a review and join us in on our discussion.
I see like a TJR poll coming on our social media in the future, like which one of the famous four is your favorite? I feel like we should put that out there to see what other people say.
We probably should.
Yes. I would be very curious in that as well.
We're at Busy Girls Pod everywhere. So give us a shout.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm Casey.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.